Now, tonight's address by President Donald Trump will cover what he calls a humanitarian and national security crisis on the southern border. Comes on the 18th day of the government shutdown, which resulted from a dispute over funding for a wall between the administration and Democrats in Congress. A dispute between them, not a wall between them. Trump spoke to reporters about his concerns about the U.S. border with Mexico this week. Here's the president.
We have a crisis at the border of drugs, of human beings being trafficked all over the world. They're coming through. And we have an absolute crisis, and of criminals and gang members coming through. It is national security. It's a national emergency.
In recent days, the administration has suggested that the president might declare a national emergency for wall funding. How do we get to this point in the immigration debate, and have we seen anything like this before? Geronimo Cortina is an associate professor of political science at the University of Houston. His research interests include American and Latino politics and immigration. Geronimo, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Well, let's take a step back from the news going on today and look at some of the recent history of immigration. Congress has been working, trying to come up with solutions on this issue for years. When was the last time we saw any substantial change in American immigration policy?
Well, that must be in the 1980s and the 1990s. So in 1986 was one of the biggest overhauls of immigration law. It was the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. And basically, IRCA revamped the whole immigration system and put a lot of employee sanctions, so on and so forth. Then we move to the Immigration Act of 1990, and once again, it changed the number of permanent visas and tinkled a little bit with the legal immigration system. Then we have another one in 1996 that basically once again changed some of the numbers, the procedures about asylum seekers, created the 287G program with local police. And then finally, we have the 2000 was LIFE, the Legal Immigration Family Equity Act LIFE, that basically put family reunification as the bedrock of American immigration policy. And after that, we have obviously the DREAM Act in 2010, and that was it. And that was basically it, that it didn't pass, of course. But those are the four or five major pieces of legislation that have been up for discussion.
And even bigger picture, we've been having this debate about how many people can come into the United States and who can go into the United States, I guess, since the beginning of the country, right?
Well, I mean, immigration has been present since the 1800s. It has been a on and off topic, especially coincides very significantly with electoral cycles. But since the 1800s, we have had those discussions, right? We have seen what constitutes an American, who can be part of the polity, who can be a citizen, who can come, who cannot come. We have had, you know, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Japanese Gentleman's Agreement with the United States. We had the Bracero program in the 1940s that ended up in 1964. So we have had a number of things since the country was founded by the founding fathers. So it's something that is not foreign to public opinion, but it has been on and off since the beginning of the country.
Now, in the last 10 years ago, I think there's a sense from everybody that something needs to change. They might not agree yet about what needs to change. Why has it become so difficult to pass things, especially in Congress, when it comes to border security and immigration laws?
Well, I think we need to understand the context. So I think, well, immigration policy as a policy issue, right, trying to think of immigration policy without the politics involved, I know it's counterintuitive and it's complicated, but immigration policy as a policy issue changed after 9/11. Why did it change? Well, remember when President Bush started to talk about immigration reform and having, you know, trying to legalize the status of millions of people, so on and so forth, came 9/11, and suddenly immigration policy went back to the back burner once again. So since then, there hasn't been significant movement of policy, and since then, immigration policy became part of, quote-unquote, of national security. It became more or what we call academics the securitization of migration. And that is a global trend. It's not only unique to the United States, but it also happened in many other parts of the world. So since then, it has changed to become a part of who can enter, settle down, and potentially be part of the polity to something about, quote-unquote, national security. And then after that, obviously, immigration, since it's so entrenched in American culture, right, we are a country of immigrants. So without immigration, we cannot think of the United States as the United States. And also immigration touches many other policy issues, right? It touches the economy, it touches education, it touches health. So once you tweak a little bit on immigration, you're going to have intended or unintended consequences on other policy issues. So when we think about immigration, it's not only who can come, right, who can enter, who can have a visa, who can become a legal permanent resident, who can naturalize as a U.S. citizen, but we're thinking about taxes, we're thinking about education, we're thinking about healthcare, so on and so forth. So that's why it's a very, very, very complex issue. Now, if you inject politics into this policy issue, it becomes almost impossible to sit down at the table and have a real discussion about policy, not politics.
Geronimo Cortina is with us right now from the University of Houston. We're talking about immigration policy and border security in the United States. We have this news of the day now with the president talking about the government shutdown and border security funding. And we're talking about some of the history that led us here. Geronimo, let's talk about the president and what he's talking about today. He's using words like crisis at the border, talking about a national emergency, figuratively and maybe literally in terms of law. Given what's happening at our border now, do you see a crisis? Do you see an emergency as compared to any other time in American history?
Well, I personally don't see it. I was at the border a couple of last year and did not see a huge emergency or anything like that. Of course, there are problems at the border, but there are problems like anywhere else. So the fact of the matter is that migrant border crosses have been declining for almost two decades at the southern border. The majority of people that overstayed or enter the country or stay in the country without proper inspection are people that were admitted with a visa, and basically they're overstayers. They overstay their visa, and suddenly they become undocumented. The fact of the matter is that migrants are less likely to commit crimes in the U.S. The fact of the matter is that the most or part of the most safest cities in the United States are at the border, if you compare it, you know, with other cities in the country. So there is not such a crisis at the border. And then if you go down to the border and ask people, right, if they want to see a border, most of the people are going to say a border wall. Most of the people don't want to see a border wall. And the other fact of the matter is that we already have some sort of wall or barrier or pedestrian barriers or vehicle barriers in almost a third of the continental border between Mexico and the U.S. So what is so the fact that we're talking about a crisis, the fact that we're talking about a chaos at the border is not being supported by the data and even by some of the reports done by the current administration. A couple of days ago, a couple of months ago, I don't remember very well, there was this report by the Secretary of State saying that there was no credible evidence that indicated that international terrorist groups have established bases in Mexico in order to cross from Mexico to the United States. So we have to see what the president is going to make a case. He can make a case, of course. Border security is very important. No one is arguing about that. But I think the means about which border security is going to be achieved, that's what's up to discussion.
We're exploring some of the history of the immigration debate in the United States up to what's happening tonight in the Oval Office. Geronimo Cortina is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Houston. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think needs to happen to see immigration changes in this country? Are there compromises you'd like to see when it comes to border security funding and allowing people into the country legally, the status of people who are here without documentation? What do you think about this possibility of a declaration of a national emergency by the Trump administration? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our look at how we got to where we are in the immigration debate today. Geronimo Cortina stays with us. He researches American and Latino politics and immigration at the University of Houston. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen when it comes to immigration laws and border security? Call 800-642-1234. Before we go to our callers, Geronimo, you mentioned how the issue of immigration has been treated more as a security issue in countries around the world. How about as a national identity issue? It seems like there are a lot of political movements and political parties from the United States to Hungary where the issue of immigration and the influx of immigrants is treated as a threat to the identity of that country. How do you see that going in the world now?
Well, I mean, indeed, we have had some nativist movements, especially in Europe, and frankly also in other parts of the world. But in those places, I think there is a very, very unique significance of what it means to be a national of country X versus a national of country Y. If you look at the debates, for example, in the United Kingdom, you see people openly addressing immigration like, we don't want you because you don't look like me, right? And those are what political parties over there are trying to basically proclaim. Here in the United States, we have a very different approach, right? The first one is that our foundational myth is based on, to one extent, on immigration. We're a country of migrants. We have the Statue of Liberty that says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, you're into breathe free. So we have a different approach to immigration on the one hand. On the other hand, we have this knowledge that we are a country that has been built by the melting pot. So we can discuss what it means to be part of the melting pot. We can discuss what it means, instead of having a melting pot, to have a tossed salad. Or we can think, right, of another analogy in terms of assimilation or incorporation in terms of the tomato soup debate, right? And basically the three have very distinct approaches. The melting pot means that once you come to the United States, you're going to jump into that melting pot, just following the analogy, and suddenly once you get out of the melting pot, you are going to be an American, whatever that means, right? And we don't have a clear definition of what it means to be an American. It would be an American to define American is X, Y, or Z. The tall salad analogy is that you come into the country as a tomato, right? And you're going to mingle with the lettuces and you're going to mingle with the onions, so on and so forth. But you keep your individual identity, but everyone forms part of a salad, of a unity, keeping individual's identity. And then you have the tomato soup. And the tomato soup is whatever you put into the tomato soup is not going to change its flavor. So that means that it's not going to accept anyone that is going to be that is not part of that tomato soup. So we have these distinct parts of assimilation, these distinct parts of incorporation into American culture. But the issue here is that we don't have a clear definition of what it means to be part of this great culture. And that is part of the debate, right? That is part of the debate in which different, for example, different people may have different opinions about what it means to be an American, but that's the beauty of the country. That's the beauty of being part of America.
I want to bring in a couple of callers now. John is with us in the Eau Claire area. John, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, John?
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention, I was in Honduras a couple months ago, and a lot of the people that I met a lot of people that had come to the United States or had family members that are in here now or had been in the past, and almost all of them come back. They're not planning to stay, but they're there because of the labor. And I think that the biggest issue we're not dealing with is the the undocumented workers and how much our, especially agricultural and some food service industries, are relying on that labor at that rate. And it's a ton of money in Honduras when they send money back, even if they're not making a lot here. But I think that if the issue of the labor that's needed in those industries is dealt with, I think that's the heart of the issue, and we're not dealing with it, I think, because a lot of people need that labor.
John, thanks for the call. Geronimo?
Well, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's part that immigration has been so entrenched into our American economy. When you look at different rates of migrant employment in very particular industries such as agricultural industry, services, and construction, you see an overrepresentation of migrant workers. And the issue here is that our H-1B visa program, the one that has guest workers, it simply doesn't work. It's not expedite enough. It's not easy enough for owners of land or ranches or farmers to bring people back to the industry. And you see it over there in Wisconsin with the dairy industry, right, that is so reliant on migrant labor. So if you need to milk a cow, right, you need to milk it. It's not that you can wait 3 days or 5 days or 1 month. You need labor. And that labor is going to come whether we like it or not. And it's just simply the loss of supply and demand. So in order to work on those things, right, we need to have a guest worker program that allows circularity, that allows people to come when the seasonal work is up and then go back to the countries of origin when they're not working, and provide some safeguards so the people that invest in bringing those guest workers don't have to reapply again and then again and again and then again. So it's some of the things that we can work out very, very easily with the countries of the region.
John, thanks for the call. Go next to Scott in Milwaukee. Scott, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think the question that you asked, your guest, about crisis is really a security question to ask somebody. I mean, crisis is basically two things to different people. Somebody in Wisconsin doesn't see a crisis, but the guy who's sitting on the border and basically has a rush of people coming at him, his life is in danger. That's definitely a crisis. And they said the other day that basically 800,000 people they catch coming in illegally, and they guess that it's probably about one or two, conservatively. So that means 800,000 people are getting into our country illegally that we can't do anything about. And the politics of it is that you already have, way back years ago, both sides said we're going to fund a wall, and yet we still haven't appropriated the money. So it's really a political thing to stop the wall from being built. Everyone realizes that a wall is going to help. We should, for one thing, we should, for a crisis, we should have somebody, not to say anything against your guest, the poli-sci professor, is somebody who's in security and say, yeah, well, these things, walls do work when you're trying to put an impediment against people wanting to come here and also people that rush the border.
Scott, thanks for the call. So, Geronimo, I mean, would an actual wall, concrete, steel, whatever, help act as a deterrent to people trying to cross the border illegally?
Well, I mean, as I said before, we have already around 600 miles of border fences, walls, et cetera, already being built. They're there over there, and you know, the first piece of the wall was in the 1800s when the U.S. Purchased the Gadsden purchase of, I think, 1853 or something like that. I think it's important to recognize that at the border, that on average, in those border counties, you don't see much more significant violence or crime, et cetera, that you would expect to see in other cities around the country. So I understand that every single country, and this is extremely important to understand, every single country has the sovereign right to protect its borders, right? It's the notion of the state. Without borders, we would not have states. And the notion of the state, the responsibility of the state, is to protect its borders. Having said that, we have to also understand that borders, walls, do not necessarily help us, especially at the southern border. Why? Because of the geography and the whole kind of the terrain that makes it impossible to build a wall in big sections of the border. I mean, if you go down to the Big Bend here in the Rio Grande Valley, it's impossible to build a wall over there. Why? Because you have mountains, you have water, you are entering in a legal condorum that would not allow the U.S. government to build a wall. You can have security measures, and that's what a lot of Republicans and Democrats are arguing, to have smart technology, right, allowing to monitor the border in a much more efficient way, rather than building a wall that later, right, has to be maintained, that later has to be controlled, that later has to be repaired. And that's money that we're going to pay eventually in the future. It's not a one-time purchase and that's it. But we would have to maintain the border. We would have to, you know, fix a hole or replace a fence or this or that. And then you have the environmental consequences of building a wall. And the environmental consequences are that species cannot cross the border back and forth following their migration patterns. And that could have very important implications for the environment down there.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Geronimo Cortina, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Houston. His research interests include American and Latino politics and immigration. We've been talking about the immigration issue now and in the past.